Well, hey, church, glad to see you guys this morning, and I am glad to be here with you. Today, we are going to be continuing in our series called Toxic, where we are talking about the things that we all do that are actually relationship killers in our life. Now, if you were to take a deep dive and kind of pull yourself back a little bit and kind of look back on your life and reflect on your current relationships and your past relationships and friendships, if you're honest with yourself, what you will see in that deep dive, you will see that our relationships are broken, all right? Our relationships are messed up. In fact, statistically, all right, we have a hard time today creating good relationships and creating good friendships, and then we have an even harder time today maintaining those relationships and those friendships. And it's interesting because even when we like defy the odds and we create and form a good relationship or a good friendship with somebody, it's like, and these are the people that we care about the most, okay? It's those relationships and those people that we find ourselves in conflict most often. Have you noticed that? Right, like the people that you care about the most and have the best relationships with, those are the ones that you seem to have conflict more and more and more with. And so have you ever found yourself in conflict with people? Okay, all right. Have you ever had a broken relationship with somebody? Have you ever been bitter towards somebody on the inside? All right, have you ever had that person who just drives you crazy? Does that happen? All right, it happens, right? And let's be honest with ourselves. We're in church, no lying here, okay? And it's not even, like, if we're honest with ourselves, it's not even, maybe it's not even something that they do wrong. You get what I'm saying? Like, maybe it's just how they are. You get what I'm saying here? Like there might just be something about them that you, if you're honest with yourself, you just find so annoying. You're like, why do you got to be like that? Why are you this way? You know, and the reason behind that is because usually those are the people who just live life different than you. Okay, we get that we're different, right? Yeah. Okay, we're different. Like some of you guys, you are rule followers, like to a T. Like if it's a rule, you're like, okay, we got to follow it. There's no wiggle room. Like we are doing this rule. And it drives you crazy when you got the other people who are more more like rebel-like, okay? When they don't follow the rules that you follow, okay? It drives you nuts, okay? And so we got those two different types of people. Some of you guys are more feeling-oriented, or emotional based. Okay, that's cool, I guess. Others of us, we're a lot more logical. And so it's like, you know, I wanna know like the black and white of it, all right? That's just how we roll. I remember I worked with this girl once who's about my age, and she was just super emotional. And I didn't know how to deal with it because I'm a dude and I'm like, what is going on here? I'm lost and all this stuff. And I remember she used to get up from the office and she you'd look at her, she'd just start crying. You're like, oh no, like somebody died. You know, what happened? And then she'd get up and she'd like run out of the room. And you're like, okay, what's that all about? And then she would come back in and we're like, you know, who died? Like what happened? Like something horrible had to have happened. And she's just like, oh, nothing. I just got emotional. You know, and you're like, what? You know, me, I'm just like, so you just got sad for no reason? Like, that doesn't make any, there's no sense in that, all right? There's no logic in that. And so, but that's just how she was wired, and it got kind of annoying for me. I'm like, why are you crying? There's no reason to cry. Stop crying, you know, that type of thing. All right, some of us, we're more cautious than others, okay? You might walk through life, and you're just very cautious. You want to make sure, you know, all your T's are crossed and all your I's are dotted and stuff like that. Others of us, we take risks, and that's okay? We're more of the wing it type people. And by the way, let me just throw this out there. It doesn't always work out perfectly for us wing it type people, but the majority of the time it works out, okay? I just want to throw that out there to all you cautious people who we drive you crazy normally. Okay, and you let us know when it doesn't. We know that, okay? But when it, usually, it works out for us. All right, we got people who are quiet in general, and we got people who are loud. We got people who talk only when it's appropriate, all right? We got people who just ramble and on and on and on and just won't shut up. We got all different types of people in here, all right? We are all different, but many times we allow the differences in our life to break our relationships between our parents and our siblings and our friends and our neighbors and our coworkers and that guy who cut you off. I mean, we don't even have to have like a real relationship with them for conflict and for differences to kind of mess things up. I remember, this was like a couple weeks ago, I was driving down just a two-lane road. It's like, you know, 55 miles an hour or whatever. And I'm going the respectable like 61, 62, okay? Some of you rule followers, that bothers you. I don't care, okay? I'm doing it. And so it's probably not, I get it's not right, but it, whatever. I'm just driving, and someone comes up behind me. They're like right on my bumper, and I'm getting annoyed. I'm like, who is this punk high school kid? Thinks he's all that. And so I'm upping my speed a little bit. You know, I'm like, we got to get some distance. Not safe. You know, got to get some distance, whatever I got to do. And so I'm going like, you know, I'm going like 65. So now I'm going 10 over, 67, 68. And they're still right on my bumper. And I'm getting like kind of upset. And then they have the audacity to pull out to pass me. You have that? Does anybody ever pass you on a two-lane road and it just angers you? It's legal. And we're like mad about it. You get what I'm saying? Because it's like, oh, my driving's not good enough for you. I'm not going, am I inconveniencing you? Is that the problem? You know? And so this person, you know, I'm thinking this is some punk high school kid. He comes out and he passes me, and I'm going pretty fast myself. And so it takes him a while, all right, to pass me. And we get about like equal with each other. And again, he's passing me slowly. And I look over to him. And I look, and I see this little old lady with her hands at like 10 and 2, her face barely above the steering wheel, and she is driving, and she's intense, and she then looks over at me and just kind of glares at me. And so at first, I'm like caught off guard. I'm like, oh, I have some compassion. This lady, she probably doesn't know how fast she's going. You know, I don't know how that all works. And but then she looks at me and she just glares at me. And then I'm like, all right, it's on. You know, like, move along, grandma. Like, let's go. And it just, you know, it just bothers me. Like, I'm annoyed. See, maybe for you, all right, it's been a while since you've experienced conflict. Maybe none of that bothers you and you're just super easy going and it's just like, no, you know, whatever. But for the most of us, like maybe you're sitting here, you're like, well, yeah, I just got into it this morning. You know what I mean? There is, you know, some of you, if we're completely honest with ourselves, you fought all the way to church this morning, all right? That's just true. That's just what happens. Yeah, there's nothing like a good on the way to church fight. You know what I'm saying? We've all been there, okay? We've all had that. Don't act like you're too good than the rest of us. We're all the same here. You know, it's the, we're late. We got to get going. They're going to start. We're not going to get a good seat. All right, I'm tired of waiting for you. Get the kids ready. What's taking so long? Stop doing that. I'm hot. Well, I'm cold. And then you walk in through the door, and they greet you at our greeters, and you're like, and they're like, how are you doing? You're like, oh, it's great. You know, it's a great day the Lord has made. Just loving it, you know? You're liars, okay? See, we've all done that. All right, we've all been in conflict, and we've all had broken relationships. Some of us, all right, maybe we have a broken relationship for like an hour, you know, and this is like, you know, drop down, you know, just, it's a big fight for like an hour. Others of us, we've had broken relationships with the same people for decades, and it's just a problem. I mean, it's we have some rivalry with our sibling or a parent, or maybe it's with a coworker that they just drive us crazy. But on the outside, I mean, on the inside, we're bitter, right? We're so bitter. But on the outside, we act like everything is all good. But on the inside, man, what they did to us and what they said about us or what they said maybe to our face, like it still bothers us. And you don't know how to fix it. You don't know how to fix it. Outside, you can fix. You can make it all look good. But we don't know how to fix the inside. We don't know how to handle conflict very well, especially when someone wrongs us. I mean, I think all of us in this room, we are in the same boat in the sense that we all dream for a good relationship. Like, we all dream for great relationships, but many of us, we just don't know how to get there. And we don't know what to do with that thing that's on the inside. We don't know what to do with the bitterness that we have, like, in our heart because of what they did to me. See, the hardest part about conflict is knowing your part, okay? The hardest part about conflict is knowing your part. See, every conflict or every fight that you've been in, like 99.999999% of the time, did you know that we are responsible for some of it? Do you realize that? All right, like if we're honest with ourselves, like we are a part of some of it. And I've done a bunch of research this week, and what I came up with was the only common denominator in every fight that you've ever been in is you. Just throwing it out there, right? Like you. So it seems like maybe you are a part of the problem. We all play a role. Whenever we're in conflict, 99.99999% of the time, whenever we're in conflict with others, all right, we have a role to play. And the first thing we got to do to kind of break, like put together our broken relationships is we got to be honest with ourselves enough to be able to understand that, hey, part of this is on me. All right, part of this is my fault. I didn't respond. I didn't react the correct way. Like, part of it is us. And so the question is, how do we fix this? And when we have damaged relationships, which many of us, I feel like we want to fix them, right? And even some of us, we're so bitter about what they did or about what they said about us that we're like not there yet. We're like, I don't care. Like, they could just go. You know, I don't want to fix it. But at least we know we should want to fix it. We just don't know how. And lucky for us, Jesus addresses broken relationships with his disciples one day, with his boys, and really there's a whole crowd around him. This is what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 18. He says, if, maybe more like when, all right, because it happens to us all. None of the people that we are around are perfect. It'd be way easier if they were, but they're not, all right? If your brother, all right, and really, brother, that we should view that as a broad term. That's not just your physical brother. That's really kind of anybody who's around you, right? If your brother sins against you, why don't you go tell him his fault, right? This is what you are to do. Go tell him his fault and between you and him alone, okay? And if he listens to you, you have won your brother. Right, so here's Jesus. He's addressing conflict in our life, and he's saying, "Hey, it happens." Right, we get in fights with people, we have arguments, we have conflict with each other, and we have broken relationships. And here's Jesus. He's saying, "If you just go talk to them and not about them," he says, "that actually does a lot." Imagine that. Isn't that crazy? He says that does a lot. Sometimes it solves the conflict right away. Actually kind of puts it down, it fixes it right away, and you get your relationship back right there on the spot. It's just the issue for us is that's just not what we do. Usually what we end up going in to do is we go and we, what do we call it? We call it venting. We vent to other people about it. Like, oh, did you know that she said this about me? I can't believe that she did this and she did. Like, we go and we vent to other people. We go and we talk about them to everybody else. And here's Jesus, he's saying, yeah, you go and talk about them to everybody else, let you in on like a little secret, yeah. Don't do that, okay? That's not helping anything. That's making everything worse. He says, don't do that. No, 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 you are not to do that. You are to go to that person who wrongs you, and this is between you and that person. He uses the word alone. Now, the thing you need to figure out before you confront them is simply, is the thing that they are doing that's driving you nuts, all right, is it a sin or is it a personal preference? All right, personal preference, by the way, is just there's a difference in the way that they live your life that you just find super annoying, okay? For example, when I was in college, I had a roommate who was a runner, okay? This dude, he ran all the time, like run, like, and he wasn't even like on a team or anything. He just liked to run. I can't imagine why, but he just did, okay? And so every day, every afternoon, he'd go out on like a 10-mile run, you know? And so he was a runner, and he also never showered, okay? And so this is a bad combination. You get what I'm saying? It was just us. And so he had that. Now, my preference is that he would shower, right? We all agree on that? Okay, I'm not weird or anything, okay? That's my preference, is that if he's going to be, actually, my preference is he just showers, like, every day, like a normal person, right? That'd be cool. But what he was doing there is not a sin. We get that? Like, there's a difference. The Bible doesn't necessarily talk about running and showering together, all right? So that's a preference of mine. I prefer that he showers. That would be nice, okay? One time I washed his towel. He spent, like, 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks. The towel didn't move, and I'm like, okay, we got a problem here. And my room stank, and it was just all this stuff. And I'm just like, man, okay, we got that solved by throwing him in, okay? So we took care of it. But so that's a preference. Now, if he was taking cash out of my wallet, that would be wrong. That'd be stealing. That'd be wrong, all right? That would be a sin. See, what Jesus specifically is talking about here is someone who sins against you. It's somebody who does something wrong to you, not someone who has a different preference than you, all right? There's a difference. And so Jesus is saying, hey, if, a fellow Christian, or maybe even that term might be even more broad than that, if somebody around you, when they do something wrong to you, instead of getting into this huge fight about it, what you are to do is to non-aggressively go and talk to them about it, right? You're supposed to confront them in a non-aggressive way. Now, every broken relationship you've had, because I know you, because you guys are my people, okay? And I get you, right? I know that you're the most mature one in the relationship, okay? Like it's just true. Like every broken relationship you've ever had, you are the most mature one in the relationship. You know how I know that? Because when you talk about what they did to you, you always sound more mature than that person, right? You always do, right? Because what they did to you was awful. And what you did was just normal response to the terrible thing that they did to you. After all, anybody would respond and anybody would react the way that you did. Your part was just so small anyway, it's just not that big of a deal, even if it wasn't right. It was always them. What they did was so immature. You are the mature person in the relationship. And I also know that because when you rehearse the narrative about what happened in your mind, which we all do that, and you think about it, right? Aren't you the most mature person? Aren't you the most reasonable person in the relationship? I mean, you always are. And so congratulations, church. All right, you guys are always the most mature person. Now, here's the deal. With that, all right, the most mature one needs to be the one to initiate making it right. See how I baited you into that? Okay? It's just true. All right, the most mature person needs to be the one to initiate making it right. And we all always think that we are the most mature person. So that's what it comes with. And so confronting and not aggressively and kind of talking to the person about what they have, the way that they have wronged you. The whole point, by the way, is not to point out sin, which obviously is a part of it. That's what you're doing. But that's not the goal of it. All right, the end game is a fixed relationship. Not winning, not losing. That's the difference. And so sometimes that works. In fact, I've been doing counseling for over a decade and talking to people and trying to work through broken relationships. And what I've seen that work, what Jesus says here, I've seen this work many, many, many times. Some people, a lot of people, they don't even realize what they've done to you. You do, but they don't realize what they've done until you've pointed it out. And a lot of times that fixes it right there on the spot. But sometimes, as we all know, that doesn't always work. And so Jesus says, right, but if he won't listen, take one or two others with you so that by the testimony of two or three witnesses, every fact may be established. So he says, if that doesn't work, this is what I want you to do. All right, this is God telling us how to fix this. And he knows. Right? He's saying, I want you to go and I want you to grab a third party. Now, this third party is not to be two or three of your friends to gang up on that guy and be like, oh, man, we'll all tell him how bad of a person this dude is. It's not what it's supposed to be. This is you grab someone who you both respect and explain the situation, and this third party will, by the way, also help you see your blind spots in the situation. Because remember, 99.9999999% of the time, you almost always have a part to play in the issue. You are part of the problem, right? It's supposed to be like ping pong. You guys play ping pong? Anybody out there? Okay, six people play ping pong. It's kind of like ping pong. We all know what ping pong is. I think so. And so it's like, it's supposed to be like a nice volley, back and forth, back and forth. When dealing with conflict, it should be a nice volley where I confront and then they answer and then I reply. While they reply, I got to be listening. Okay, that's just good communication skills. We all understand that. But inevitably, what ends up happening, or what a lot of times ends up happening, is that someone, as they're hitting it back over, we got this nice volley, somebody puts a little spin on it. You know what I'm talking about? It's super annoying. And it bothers you. And it gets a little personal. And then all of a sudden, you're in the argument to win. Right? You're trying to smack them in their face in that sense, right? You are trying to win the argument. And I think Jesus, he understands kind of what the disciples are thinking, because they're standing there, they're like, okay, wait, what if they don't play nice? What if they put the spin on? All right, what about that? What if they smack it down? What if they spike it? You know, so what do we do there? And so the disciples, they're thinking about this. And Peter, of course, this is Peter, because this is what Peter did. Peter was the dude that asked all the dumb questions that you and I think about, because we're dumb too, but we don't have the opportunity to ask, which is good, okay? And so here's Peter. He kind of raises his hand. He's like, yo, Jesus, I got a question, okay? You're saying all this? We got a briv, forgive our brother and stuff. He's like, how many times must I forgive my brother? All right, or sister who sins against me. Like, I just want to know, because this is what we all want to know, right? We want to know where the heck the line is. All right, where's the line? All right, just tell me where the line is, and I'll go as close as I can to it, but I won't step over or try not to step over. If you're a rebel, maybe you step over just a little bit, okay? But where's the line is what he's asking. He says, as many as seven times? Now, when Jesus, or when Peter's asking this, he's like seven times. If they do the same wrong thing against me for seven times, you know, is that enough? If I forgive him that many times? And what he's doing here is he's not just making this number up on the spot. What he's doing is he knows Jewish tradition. And you got to understand, the whole crowd knows this. The Jewish religious people taught that you needed to forgive your neighbor, forgive your brother or sister. You need to forgive them up to three times, okay? And so if they do the same wrong thing to you three times, or let's say if they did the same wrong thing to you four times, then you don't have to forgive them anymore. In fact, it might even be better if you don't forgive them so you can, like, you know, teach them a lesson, okay? That's what they thought. And so that's what they taught. And so this is a big, big, big deal for Peter. Peter is more than doubling it. In fact, this seven times, this is an impressive number that Peter is giving. And everybody in the crowd, they're all like, dang, all right, seven times, that dude's crazy, you know? And it's interesting, this number is just a lot bigger than what, you know, what they were taught from their religious leaders. Now, when I was in college, I spent a summer in Chicago working at a church plant there. And we worked all day and did whatever we were doing. But in the evenings, our boss came to us. He says, hey, we usually had them off, but it kind of switched. He said, hey, I want you guys from every evening from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., I want you to do the kind of like the man on the street thing where you're out there. And we had all these surveys that he wanted us to try to get people to answer, which I hated doing. Because you're like the annoying guy. No one wants to talk to you. You know, you're like, hey, would you please? No, okay. All right, you guys have experienced that if you've been to a large city. I was that guy, okay? And so we're there, and it was about halfway through summer. We only had to do 50 of these, so that's like a few every night. And so I'm there, and it was about halfway through summer, and I had like 40, maybe just over 40 of these done, okay? Which, by the way, there were six of us doing this, and I think the next person had like finished the whole summer with like 18, okay? So I'm just saying, I was doing my stuff. I was the best one. That's what I want you guys to know. Okay. And so I'm there, and I had like over 40 done, and then my boss went on vacation for a week. So I'm like, well, then I'm not doing it. You know, like, I got a few more weeks. When he gets back, I'll wrap up my next 10 to 8 or whatever. I'll do that then. Like, I'm going to kind of take it easy because he's not watching us all the time. And so I went, actually, my girlfriend at the time, her name was Kate, ended up marrying that girl. She was there, so I'm like, I'm going to. So in the evenings, I started going to Kate's house during that week. And one of the days, I was getting home late. I remember I was stuck in traffic, like traffic not moving. It's a standstill, Chicago. And it's like midnight, so I'm late already. And my boss calls me from vacation. He's on vacation, and he's like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm stuck in traffic. I'm trying. Like, I'm sorry. I misjudged. You know, I don't know. How was I supposed to know? And I get that I'm late. And he's like, well, you're supposed to be, like, you're not getting your work done. You're supposed to be doing those surveys. And you know, you're not doing it because you were gone. You weren't working, doing it this evening. And I'm like, well, I'm almost done with them. He's like, I don't care. You got to be finishing them. I'm like, okay, you know. And then he said, we'll talk about this when I get home. That's not good, right? I'm like, uh-oh. All right. And so I had 3 days before he was coming home. And so my goal is, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna finish my 50 before he gets home, you know, so I can say, well, I'm done. And so I did that, but then I did that like in like one night. And so I had two nights left, and I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna work my butt off, and I am going to do as many as I possibly could. I'm gonna try to do 100. Like, I'm going to try to do 25 the next two nights. And so I went out there, and I did that. And then I remember walking home. It was like the night before he was getting back. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do two more just so I can say I more than doubled it, you know? Like, be able to say that I more than doubled it. Not just one over, but two. It just sounded way better in my mind. And so that's what I did. And I remember he got back, and we had that meeting, which was super awkward. And he's like, you're not getting your stuff done. And I'm like, actually, I'm done. And he was like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I finished, I did what you asked me to do. And so, and he was like, well, you know, then you should probably do like 100 then. I'm like, actually, I did more than 100. You know, he like doubled it and I was like, done. And so I really got him, you know, that's what I was trying to do. Anyway, he was impressed. He was like, oh, I didn't realize that. And it helped soften the blow. That's what Peter's doing here. He had the same like thinking as 22-year-old Zach did, or 21, I don't know how old I was. But Peter's doing the same thing. It's the, I'm gonna double what you say or what the religious leader has taught me, and then I'm gonna throw one in just for good measure. All right, that's what he's doing. And he's thinking that Jesus is gonna be pretty impressed. Like, wow, Peter. And Peter's feeling pretty good about himself. He's like, look at me, everybody. I'm a super Christian. Hopefully that crowd heard me. I said, 7. All right, that's a lot. And he walked on water, and he's like, I'm the rock. And he's thinking that he's something right now. But then Jesus, he looks at him, and he responds. And Jesus says, no, Peter. He says, I tell you, not as many as 7. And Peter's like, oh, yeah, I know the answer. The answer's 3. He's like, no, but 70 times 7. Everybody's like, what? And some of you guys right now, you're doing the math. You're like, how many is that? Okay, because there's some people in my life that we're probably pretty close to that number, all right? But Jesus, it's not about a number. He might as well have said 77 trillion times. His point is that it's limitless. His point is there is no number. His point is that repairing a broken relationship almost always requires this thing that we hate giving out called forgiveness. See, we believe that whenever we forgive, it's like doing someone else a favor, all right? And in a sense, it kind of is. Like, whenever we're hurt or whenever we're insulted by somebody else, all right, there's always a sense of, hey, they owe me. There is a debt in the relationship. That's why we say things like, you owe me an apology. And us as victims, we always come away feeling like we're owed something, all right? Like the boss owes me recognition, or the wife owes me respect, or my friend owes me loyalty, or my husband owes it to me to listen to what I have to say. And because of that, we only feel justified when they come and they acknowledge their debt and they offer to pay back what they did, you know, in a sense, okay, if that makes sense. That's when we feel justified. But when that doesn't happen, what we end up doing is we hold on to that offense, and then we take that offense and we build our case around it. And that's where we start rehearsing things in our head. We rehearse the narrative. We have the imaginary conversations. Don't act like you don't do this. You do, right? And we always look good in those conversations, right? We always look like the most mature one. Right, we think to ourselves, we're like, hey, if we could have that perfect conversation, you know, if it was set up just right, I'd have the perfect response. It's like the ping pong paddle. You just slam it on them, and I'd tell them who's right, and I'd show them why they're the ones that's wrong. And so that's what we do. We build our case. All of us, we have our own tactics, but the whole idea is I don't owe them anything, let alone forgiveness. They owe me. That's where Peter is at. And Peter's asking a clear question, and he's looking for a clear answer. And Jesus tells him, and the whole crowd, a strange story. He says, for this reason, the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. He says, when he began to settle accounts, he had one servant who owed him 10,000 talents, okay? This 10,000 talents, it's an unaccountable amount. This is like $30 trillion in kind of today's day and age, okay? $30 trillion. All right, can you imagine anything owing anything $30 trillion besides our country, okay? All right, which is more, all right? $30 trillion, all right? This is one person who owes $30 trillion to his master. It's impossible to pay back. He couldn't pay that back with a million lifetimes. Like, it's just impossible. And so he's brought before his master, and since he did not have the money to pay it back, obviously he didn't. Right, his master commanded that he, his wife, and his children, and everything that he had be sold to pay the debt. All right, so his master's like, all right, well, I'm just going to take everything that you got because you owe me everything plus $30 trillion. You know, like, you owe me everything. I'm going to take whatever I can get, and at least I get something back. And when the servant hears this, Jesus says he fell face down, which is like the position of humbleness. It's like the position of an apology. He's saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Please, 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 please have mercy on me and be patient with me, and I will pay you back everything, which is a lie because it's impossible. He cannot do it. There's no way. And then the master of that servant, and he knows, that this isn't true. But the master of that servant had compassion, and he released him, and he forgave him the loan. I mean, think about what the master could have said. He could have said, well, then just pay me what you got. All right, pay me what you can. But no, he erased the debt completely. All right, he erased it completely. And the people in the crowd, when Jesus is telling the story, they're just like, whoa, 30 trillion, that's a lot. And the disciples, they're sitting there and they're like, whoa, that's a pretty big debt that was forgiven. By the way, can I just point this out? This is what forgiveness is. See, some of us, we don't understand forgiveness. Forgiveness is not forgetting, okay? It's just not, right? The king forgives the debt. We're going to find out in a couple verses later, he does not forget the debt. He forgives it. He doesn't forget it, right? This doesn't mean that trust is instantly reinstated. Right? Forgiving and trusting are two different things. Trust is something that takes time to build on somebody. That's what trust is, right? This isn't forgetting. This isn't, well, okay, now I trust you with everything. That's not what this is. This is forgiving. What exactly is the king and the master doing, right? This is what forgiveness is. He is absorbing the debt. That's what he's doing. He is absorbing the debt. That's what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is when someone owes you and you take on that debt and you absorb that debt and you take the hit and you are the one who takes the blow. This is not payback, right? Meaning there is no payback. They don't owe you anymore. That's what forgiveness is. By the way, can I just point this out? Every single time, 100%, no exceptions. Forgiveness always costs you something. It always costs you. Not the other person. It always costs you. And so that's what the master does. He absorbs the debt. He forgives the loan, and the servant goes free. Jesus says that servant went out, and he found one of his fellow servants who owed him like 100 denarii, which is about 20 grand. Okay, by the way, if you owed me 20 grand, I'd want you to pay me back, okay? I could go for 20 grand. But way smaller than 30 trillion, okay? We all get that. It says he grabbed him and he started choking him. I wouldn't do that to you. But he says, pay what you owe. Give me what you owe. And at this, his fellow servant, he fell down and he began begging him. He says, please, please, please be patient with me and I will pay you back. Does that scenario sound familiar? All right? It's exactly what the original servant did. But the original servant, he was not willing. And instead he went and he threw him into prison until he could pay back what was owed. Now, when the other servants saw what had taken place, it says they were deeply distressed and they went and they reported to their master everything that had happened. They're like, man, this ain't right. Like this is really messed up. And then after he had summoned him, his master said, he says, hey, what is going on here? You wicked servant. He says, I forgave you. He says, I forgave you all that debt because you begged me. Shouldn't you also have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you? It says, and because he was angry, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he could pay back everything that was owed. End of story. See, I don't know what Peter's thinking at this moment, but I'm guessing that 2/3 through the story, he realizes that this isn't going his way. You know, like, okay. Hey, he probably understands that he's in this story, right? All the stories that Jesus told, there's always a God figure, right? And there's always an us figure. It's a, for Peter, it'd be a him figure. And so I'm sure he's going through the story. He's like, okay, I get it. Like the king and the master is God and the wicked servant, like, well, I guess that's me because I'm the one who's saying, do we have to forgive? And that's exactly right. Here's Jesus. He's basically saying, hey, Peter, you have to forgive that person. You have to. Every single time. You know why? What's his point? He's saying, because I have forgiven you. And then on top of that, it's this idea that, hey, if you don't, I'm coming for you. I'm coming after you. And then Jesus has a statement that I wish I could delete from the Bible. You ever have those where you're just like, oh, why do you have to say that? You know? But it's there. I wish he didn't say it. But he says, so awesome. This is where he connects it back to us. He says, so awesome my Heavenly Father will do to you. Who's you? You're you, okay? And me. Unless every one of you forgives his brother and sister from your heart. right? This is deep. This isn't just, you just say it verbally. Ah, I forgive you. You're good. All right, kind of like you make your kids do when it's like, hey, you know, you hit that person, so you're like, you know, apologize to them. I'm sorry. Now forgive them. I forgive you. You know, it's not that. That don't count. That ain't from the heart. All right? He's saying this isn't something that you just kind of make up in your mind. No, this is something from the heart. You have to forgive. It's not just you telling me forgive them and you walk away. This is like you erase the bitterness from your heart. I mean, this is an issue. And at this point, I think Peter, he's just sad. He brought up, you know, he even brought up the subject. What he's saying is, a true Christian forgives every single time. And so I'm just saying, think logically here. This is how I think. All right. That means if we don't forgive every single time, it's almost like we should be questioning whether we're a true Christian. See, some of us, I know, we're sitting here, and there's people, you know the name. I mean, you could think of the person right now where you're just like, or the people that you have not forgiven. You still have bitterness. You maybe even told them you forgive them, but in reality, you haven't. Not from the heart. And that's an issue. Because he's saying a true Christian always forgives. And we know what forgiveness is the most. You know why? Because we've been forgiven. We understand how this whole forgiveness thing works. And God has forgiven us a heck of a lot more than we ever will have to forgive anybody around us. We've done a lot more against God than what anybody has ever done against us. See, when you have conflict, you really have two options. You got bitterness or forgiveness. By the way, forgiveness is the key to fixing relationships. And can I just point this out? Forgiveness is not a feeling. All right, forgiveness is a choice. And it's not about fairness. If you're waiting for it to be fair, it ain't ever going to be fair. It ain't fair. All right, it's just not. That's just not how it works. And so some of us, we're sitting here, we're like, well, I'm waiting to forgive until it feels right. Okay, you keep waiting for your feeling of forgiveness, you know, to come. But here's the problem. Forgiveness is not a feeling. Right? It's that choice. It's that decision of us letting go of the debt that they owe to you. Jesus, he's not saying, hey, you should forgive when you feel like it. He doesn't say that. I wish he did. That'd be so much easier. He says, no, you always forgive. You do it. Whether they deserve it or not, you forgive. Right? Others of us were thinking, well, I'll forgive them when, you know, or if I forgive them, what I feel like it's almost like they get away with it. And so we don't. We hang on to that bitterness. Like we still hold this grudge against that person. And what we're actually saying in our hearts, maybe we don't say this out loud, but it's like, hey, you know, we're saying, God, you can't handle this one on your own. Okay, like I know you're God, but on this particular issue and with this person, like if I don't help you punish them, you know, they might get away with it because God, you know, you need me to get them. Can I just let you in on a little secret? God doesn't need you, okay? He doesn't need you. Your job is not to punish them. Your job is not to make them feel bad. Unfortunately for you, your job is to forgive them. And so real quick, how do I know if I've forgiven them or not? What are some signs that maybe we're struggling with this whole thing called forgiveness? Number one, do you think about it all the time? All right, do you dwell on it all the time? Do you run through the narrative in your mind, rehearse the narrative where it's like, okay, you know, they did this, and you argue with them in your mind all the time? All right, because if you do, my guess is that you haven't forgiven. Or do you talk about it all the time with other people? Maybe you even bring it up with them, like, well, you know, well, you did that, remember that? You know, like, do you still do that? Because if that's true, then you haven't forgiven. You're still holding on to that thing. And here's the hardest one, all right? This is the one where I'm like, okay. There's a good sign that you haven't forgiven is that you can't cheer for them. Meaning you are unable to wish the best for them. See, the first step in repairing and assembling broken relationships and broken friendships is to talk to them about it. That's what Jesus says. At least put the ball in their court, confront them in a non-aggressive way, and it's their turn to reply. But even if that doesn't go well, really, no matter what the outcome of that, and no matter what, Jesus says we are required to forgive because we've been forgiven. See, when you do conflict well, And when you learn how to forgive well, what it ends up doing is it deepens your relationships and it opens communication. And maybe the best thing, it gets your eyes off yourself. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words. Man, this is tough stuff. Like, it's just hard. None of us are good at this. We all struggle with this. And then it's almost like you make this so extreme. Like we don't go to heaven if we don't know how to forgive. And that should freak a bunch of us here out, including me. Maybe it shows us how important forgiveness is. It also should remind us how much you've forgiven from us, which is more than we could ever repay. God, we thank you for loving us so much that you came and you paid our sin debt that we had against you. God, we ask that you'd help us repair those relationships, those broken relationships that we have all throughout our life. God, we need you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right.